All right, so let's get started. We are holding on Kuf Tes Amud Beis about 3/4 of the way down the Amud, winding into the Zeh. All right, so we've talked about that the Mishnah had mentioned that if you want to eat a cow, an udder of an animal, then you have to rip it, you have to rip it open to get out the milk that's in it. And if you didn't, then the Mishnah had said, ain't it over all of, then you're not over on it. And we had two versions of what Rav said on that. One is that it means it's mutter even to Rabbanon, even if you didn't whip it. And the other version is that no, it would be still mutter to Raisa because the milk in it is only cholop shchuta, it's only milk from a shechted animal, but mid Rabbanon it would be also. Within that, by the way, you have a multi-way machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos and the Rif and about what scenario are we talking about over here? Are we talking about where are we saying that it's mutter b'dieved midrabanon only if it's being roasted, but it would be also Rashi learns that it would be also completely if it was cooked in a pot because then the milk comes out of it and goes into the pot and then gets absorbed back into the meat. Whereas therefore Rashi learns that the whole discussion over here is about if you're roasting it. Whereas Tosfos learns that not, that we may even be talking about if you're cooking it, the Rif learns that we may even be talking about that if you're roasting it, it may not even require to be ripped, which we're going to have now in a second. We're going to have Rav Nachman's opinion about it. So you have a number of different opinions of Rishonim on the subject. Okay. So, you have different opinions in Halacha about it. So how do you, when the Mishnah had said that you have to rip open the udder, the cow, what exactly, how do you rip it? Amud of Yehuda, kodei shesi ve'edev v'tochei v'kosel. You have to rip it shesi ve'edev, lengthwise and widthwise, and then you have to press it against the wall, or against some other hard surface like that. And that way, the tearing allows the milk to start coming out, and when you press it against the wall, then it gets out as much as possible of the milk.
But even if you ate the milk, it wouldn't be awesome.
Again, midaraisa wouldn't be awesome because it's called shchuta. But nevertheless, we could say that it is still also dirabanan. We could say, like Rav's first lashon, that it's not also even dirabanan. However, Rashi learns that that's only talking about if you're roasting it, because then all the milk drips out. Rashi would learn that if you're cooking it in a pot, you're still going to have a problem because milk comes out of it into the pot and then gets reabsorbed into the meat. Again, Tosfos learns that. No, not Doraisa, but nevertheless, Dirabon. Okay. Tosfos would learn that there's not really a problem if you're cooking it by itself in a pot if you didn't whip it, because the milk that came out of it is not really considered significant enough that it'll after it when it goes back in. The problem is if you cook it with other meat. We learned in the previous paragraph that then you have to have bitul b'shishin, that the udder itself counts as one of the 60. But nevertheless, then you would have a problem. And then again, Tosfos learns that if you're going to be roasting it, you do have to rip it. And then you have the Rif learns that if you're roasting it, you don't even have to rip it. The whole discussion over here is about cooking it. Okay. Fine. So we find that Rabbi Lazar says to his servant, to his attendant, Krali v'amno echel, rip open a chal for me, and I'll eat it. So the question is, my kamash malon, what exactly is the chiddush of that story? Machnisin, that's exactly what the Mishnah says, that you have to rip it. The answer is, ha kamash malon, b'lebin and shesi v'edev v'tochev v'kosel. Rabbi Lazar wants to inform us that he holds, unlike what we just said, that Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to rip it shesi v'edev, Rabbi Lazar is saying, no, you don't have to rip it shesi v'edev, and you don't have to press it against the wall, as long as you ripped it. As long as you ripped it to some degree, then that's good enough. Therefore, he just says krali without specifying that he means krali shesi ve'erev.
Shesi
ve'erev would mean lengthwise and widthwise. So Rabbi Lazar is saying that he holds that you don't require that. Again, you have the same machlokas who shown him. When can we say that it's allowed without that? When can we say that it's not? Depends again whether you're roasting it or cooking it, whether you're cooking it by itself or with other meat, etc. Okay.
Is there any discussion? I don't remember. About shesi bear, why not just shesi, or why not just...
Because just shesi by itself, or just ate by itself, is not going to be enough to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to...
Because it's not in a pool.
It's not in a pool, it's embedded throughout the sacks in the chal, right. In Shulchan Aruch, it also talks about other possibilities. Let's say if you cut it into small pieces in order to cook, then that's just, yeah. Okay. later on, by the way, at the end of the sugya, later on, Rashi summarizes and says that you need to rip at Shesti Ve'erev. Rashi does not mention over there the Tochei V'Koisel, the pressing against the wall, which leads to a lot of discussion among the Mephoshim. Why not? It seems, according to the various opinions over here, either you need Shesti Ve'erev and to press against the wall, or you need, just like Rebbe Lazar is saying over here, just to rip in one direction, or, as we're going to see in a second, Rebbe Nachman says that at least to roast it, you don't even need that. So where is it actually getting from exactly that you need Shesti Ve'erev, but not Tochei V'Koisel? Nevertheless, it says that the Rishonim say, nevertheless, the velt does hold like Rashi in that, but all you need is Shesti Ve'erev.
Length
and width, right. Yeah,
you don't need...
Well, in Shulchan Aruch, it also brings, on the other hand, you have the opinion of the Rambam, who takes the Gemara at face value, that you need Shesti Ve'erev, but Tochei V'Koisel. So you have different...
Because I remember from Smitha, that you need all of it.
So that's what I'm saying. You have Rishonim who say that the velt firsach, at least in their time, the velt held like
rat. We're more modern.
The only way
you can do it is...
Yeah. Okay, so here's an example. And
then you have to put Sliya too.
Well, that's what we're talking about, Sliya versus Bishul or whatever. Yeah, and actually there is a girsa over here. There is a girsa over here that specifically we're talking about when is it good enough to have kriya ba'alma only if you're going to be roasting it, because then you just need a little kriya, because then all of it is gonna come out, all of it is gonna drain out. Okay, fine. Omer le Yalta le Rav Nachman. So one time Yalta says to Rav Nachman, who was her husband, Mechti, she says, let's consider. Called the Asalon Rachmana, we find that everything that the Torah offers to us, Sharalon Kavasei, the Torah is matira, something that's parallel to it. Every issue, you have some similar kind of thing which is mutter. For example, Asalon Dhamma, for example, the Torah offers us to eat blood. On the other hand, Sharalon Kavda, but the Torah is matira us to eat the liver, even though the liver, as we're going to say, is soon in the Gemara, it's saturated with blood so much that you have to kasher it in a special way. Rashi actually uses the expression the liver is all blood, which in effect that's pretty much what it is. But nevertheless, it's mutter. Another example is nida. The Torah asks us to have relations with the nida, but dam toihar. Against that, you have a parallel thing with mutter: is you're allowed to have relations with a man is allowed to have relations with his wife when she's bleeding during a certain period of time after she gave birth. Minat Torah and midrabbanan. That's the way. Nowadays we're not knowing that. But in principle, Minat Torah, once a woman has given birth, you have a period of 7 days after a boy, 14 after a girl, when she bleeds during that time that she's tummy. After that, though, she can go to the mikveh, and for the next 33 days for a boy or 66 for a girl, even if she's bleeding, you still must just have relations with her. So you see, yeah. Midrabanan also. Later, and in fact, Rambam writes that in his time, there were places already that offered it, and there were still places where they had the minhag that they were still matter it. Later on, the minhag developed everywhere to offer it. But that's a minhag. We're talking about the original din. Another example, chalev behema. The Torah tells us not to eat the chalev of a domestic animal. Parallel to that, you have chalev chaya. You have the chalev of a wild animal, which tastes the same as mutter. Chazir, the Torah tells us not to eat chazir. Parallel to that, and you have moicha de shibuta, the brain of a shibuta fish, which tastes like chazir.
Well, that's
okay.
Really
no, but it's still the point is you have a similar taste. Similarly, girusa, the Torah after is a type of bird called girusa, which we learned back at the end of the third parak when we're talking about kosher and non-kosher birds. We mentioned it. Parallel to that, you have lishna de kavra, the tongue of a kavra fish. Kavra in some places in Shas is used as a generic word for fish. There's actually a Tosfos in Moed Katan, which is referred to on the side over here in the Torah of Shas, that says that evidently over here the Gemara means kavra to be a specific species. Otherwise, in Pashtus, not all fish tongues taste the same, but this particular species has a tongue that tastes like this girusa bird. Another example, Asha fish. You're not allowed to have relations with a married woman. But parallel to that, Grusha B'chaya Baila. But you're allowed to marry and have relations with a woman who is divorced, even though her husband is alive. Even though in a certain way, that's life. That's life. She's still married because her husband is still alive.
So someone's allowed to have that fish, the brain of the fish, even though it's a cousin.
Yes, that's the point.
Oh,
that's
wow.
The point. That's the whole point. Another example, Eishes Och. You're not allowed to have relations with your brother's wife, but parallel to that, Yavama. You have in the case of Yavama, it's a mitzvah too, actually. And Kusis, a Jew, a Jewish man is not allowed to have relations with a Goyish woman. Parallel to that, you have Yifas Toya, the famous case where the soldier takes the Yifas Toya and is allowed
it's,
to, yeah.
It's very much the same.
It's very similar. Yeah. So some of them are more similar than others.
You're not allowed to have Yifas Toya and Kusis.
No, no, the point is the Yifas Toya is a Goyish woman who's captured in battle,
yeah.
And you're allowed, according to many Rishonim, you're allowed to have relations with her that first time while she's still a Goyta. If you want to marry her after that, then you have to go through the whole process of leaving her time to mourn family and whatever, and then...
She has to consent, by the way.
Of course she has to consent. Well,
to marry, yes. For the first relations,
I don't think so, but I'm not sure about that. Anyway, the point is that you see that there you have a case where a Jewish man is allowed to consort with a Goyish woman. Anyway, so she says, and by the way, what the point she's making, why indeed should this be this way, that Hashem arranged that everything that's also has something parallel to it, there are a couple of ideas that different Mephoshim give. One idea, Marsha says, this way we realize that all of these surim in the Torah are a gzeira from Hashem. We shouldn't start thinking there's a logical reason behind them. It's because of health reasons or this or that or the other, as people are always coming up with. No, because you see, you have something very similar that the Torah itself is being mounted. A couple of achronim talk about the idea that Shalom HaKadosh brings something like this, the Chidah brings something like this, that the idea is we know that a person is not supposed to say, I don't like chazir flesh, I would like it, ekshi, but what can I do? Hashem told me not to. So this way, this stresses once the person realizes, hey, you know, there's this brains of a shibuta that tastes like chazir. So why shouldn't I be able to have actual chazir? Because Hashem said so, period, and therefore that strengthens that by him. There's an idea that the Maharal brings, and the Rebbe brings it a couple of times in Sichas. And there's an idea, everything in the world, how did there come to be Tumah and things that are also in the world? There's sort of a byproduct of things that are Mutter. Hashem created things of Kedusha, and along with them, because as a usual thing, just like a fruit comes with peels and shells, so also Kedusha comes with Tumah. So therefore, Hashem created things that are Mutter, and along with them come also parallel things that are also. And then you have an idea also. You have an idea. I've seen this in a number of Rabbi Victor Miller's books, where he stresses an idea that we see from this. Hashem is not trying to deny us pleasures in the world. People sometimes take the view that you have all these things in Torah that are also. It must mean Hashem is mean. Hashem wants to prevent us from having these pleasures. This Gemara over here, Yalta, is telling us not like that. You should realize that Hashem gives you everything that's also. Hashem found something. Hashem gives you something parallel to it that's mutter. Well, that she's giving many examples. Yalta was from Nachman's wife. By the way, I can tell you also, Rabbi Miller gives an example of this right in the conversation, in the beginning of the conversation between the Nachash and Chava and Gan Eden. What does he start off with? Hashem put you in this beautiful garden full of fruit, and then he told you not to eat any of it. What a mean God he is. And she correctly answers, no, we're allowed to eat from all the trees. Only this one Hashem put off limits to us. Later on, he convinced her to eat from that one, but that's another matter. Anyway.
Did you see anything from Rabbi Levi Yitzchak?
From Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father? No, I did not.
I think that would be interesting, too.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
Kabbalah here,
yeah. I didn't see anything on it. Okay, anyway, so she finishes off. But in Lamecho Bistra B'chalva. So now I want to eat Bosa B'chalav. What is the parallel to Bosa B'chalav that would be Mutter?
Right.
So Rav Nachman answers by turning to the cooks, the chefs, or whatever in his household, and tells them, "Ziku lo kachli, put udders on a spit for her, to roast." And that's why we're bringing this in here. Implying, in other words, that he's saying you don't even need to rip them open. You can just put them on a spit and roast them as is, and that way there's a flavor of milk in it, which is mutter. One second, that's what we have to figure out. Tosfos brings from the Aruch a different expression. Rashi explains that ziku means put them on a spit. Tosfos brings from the Aruch that ziku comes from the word zikim, which means like bags that are full. So in other words, make sure the udder is still full of milk when you put it on the spit. So therefore, she'll have the equivalent of boss of a hole. So the question is, v'hanan tnan koroi, what about the Mishnah that said that you're supposed to rip it open first?
Why we didn't mention Kilayim and Kitzis?
Because it's not relevant over here. A person doesn't have a nose specifically from wearing Kalash.
Okay. I think there's a place where it does have that.
Could be. Like, could be. Choice was mentioned a piyut from Rabbi Elazar Akalu that's in some kehillos. They say for Parshas Parah where Rabbi Elazar Akalu mentions some other examples of if they're parallel to Heter. Okay, anyway, the point is, so the question is, didn't the Mishnah say that you have to rip it? So why isn't Rav Nachman telling the cooks to rip it first? The answer is Ahula Kedeva. Rav Nachman would understand that when the Mishnah says you have to rip it, that's if you want to cook it in a pot. Because, again, then you have the problem. The milk comes out of it during the cooking, and then it gets reabsorbed into the meat. As opposed to when you're roasting it on a spit, where any milk that's in it drips out and falls into the fire and goes away, then you wouldn't need to rip it. So the question is, but didn't the Mishnah use the expression that if you cooked it, meaning that only if you cooked it without ripping it, then it's okay, but l'chatchila not. The answer is, Rav Nachman would learn, hu adin da'afilu l'chatchila. No, it means it's mutter even l'chatchila without the cooking. But because the Braisa that we quoted before wanted to say, not the Mishnah actually, but the Braisa that we quoted before that mentioned that the chal you're supposed to rip open, and if you didn't, then you cook, then you're not over on it. Because the Braisa wants to continue with the case, that if you took the stomach of a nursing animal and cooked it with the milk still inside, where then indeed it's only b'di'evid. Now there, it wouldn't work even b'di'evid, because there you have an actual pool of milk in the stomach over there, and therefore there's no heter for it. Therefore, Tananami Reisha, Shebishla, therefore the Reisha also uses the expression, if he cooked it, but not implying, says Rav Nachman, that you couldn't cook that l'chatchila. Again, according to Rashi, Rav Nachman would specifically be talking about that it's mutter, that he would hold that it's mutter without ripping it open, only for roasting, according to Rav Ben Tam, and according to the Rif, maybe even Rav Nachman would be more lenient and allow it if you're cooking it in a pot, as long as you're not cooking it with other meat. So more on this topic of chal. By the way, I saw an interesting little thing on this. We have another example. We learned in the previous parak of Or Masechta about Gid Anosha. Why didn't Yalta mention an example of something parallel to Gid Anosha? That's also. So I saw an interesting answer from Rabbi Avigdor Nebenstahl. That's the question. So I saw an interesting thing from Rabbi Avigdor Nebenstahl, who was a Rosh Hashiva in the Old City. He was also the Rav of the Old City for many years. Anyway, he says, very simple, we learned that the Gid Anosha doesn't have a flavor in Begidin Benos and Tam. So we don't need something parallel to it that doesn't have a Tam anyway. Well, the Halacha is in Begidin Benos and Tam, therefore, yeah. Okay, more on this topic of Chal. Kisolik Rabbi Elazar, when Rabbi Elazar went up, when he moved from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechei L'Zeiri, he met Zeiri, who also originally had come from Bavel years before, Omale, and he asked him, Ikatana da'asni el Rav Chal, is there the Tana over here who taught Rav the din about Chal? Now we know throughout Shas that Mishnayos and Braisos weren't written down. You had Tanoim, not Tanoim as in the usual meaning of it, but you had a Tana in each Beis Medrash whose job was to say by heart the Mishnayos and Braisos so everybody could learn them. So is there somebody over here who taught Rav the din, the Mishnah, or the Braisa about Chal? Now, what was the problem? Rashi explains, remember, we had two versions of Rav's din about a Chal. We had one version that said that if you didn't rip it open before you roasted it or cooked it, then it's fine. It's mutter even b'drabanan. We had a second version that said that no, if you didn't rip it open, then it will be also drabanan. So Rav Elazar is what is concerned about that. Where does Rav get that from? Where does Rav get to be so machmer about it that if you didn't rip it open, then it should be also even b'diyat, that it should be also the second version had said that if you don't rip it open, then it's also.
And the first one?
The first one had said that it's mutter. Right. So that's according to Rashi. Tosfos says that no. What it is the Gemara is going to mention soon that in Surah, which is where Rav's Beis Medrash was, there was a minhag not to eat the chal, not to eat the udder at all. So therefore, Rav Elazar is wondering where did Rav get that from? In our Mishnah, we said that as long as you rip it open, it's fine. Okay, so who is there over here who taught Rav this din that he came up that he's so mad? Ach v'yele Rav Yitzchak Bar Avudimi. So the people over there showed him, pointed to Rav Yitzchak Bar Avudimi. The Tosfos points out there are actually two Amoraim of that name, one that we're talking about over here that was in Rav's time, a later one who was a Rebbe of Rava a few generations later. Anyway, Omalei, so Rav Yitzchak Bar Avudimi says, Ani lo shenisa lo chal kolikar. No, actually, I didn't teach at Rav any particular din about the chal. So where did he get this chumra of his for? Again, the second version, or that you don't eat chal at all. The Rav bikamotz of a goder begeder. Rather, what it is Rav did this on his own. He found like an open, so to speak, like an open valley, an open field that everybody is just trampling, and he made a fence around it. In other words, he found that people are being careless about the dinim of Bosa B'cholov, and therefore he made an extra chumra on it. Namely, this particular din. The Rav Ikwal of Tassal Push, because it happened that Rav visited Tassal Push, which is the name of a city, in Bala, someplace in Bala. Shamalahi Itza, he overheard a lady, a Jewish woman, the Ka'amra Lachavato, who says to her friend, also a Jewish woman, Riva de Bisra Kamachelba Boil of Ashuli, she asks her a Riva, a quarter of a litra of meat, like a pound, let's say, how much milk do you need to cook it? In other words, she needed to know how much she needs for the recipe, but she didn't realize the Bosa B'cholov is also. So he says to himself, like, Muni, the Bosa B'cholov also, look at this, the Jews over here don't even realize that Bosa B'cholov is also. Iakav, so he stayed in that city a while, and eventually, so he asked them all together to eat the udder, this way they would always remember to be careful about Bosa B'cholov. So again, according to Rashi's understanding, that's where we got the second version of Rav. So in other words, Rav himself would hold like the first version, that if you didn't rip the chal open, b'dievet it's mutter. But Rav Paskin, for these people of Tassel Push, he Paskin like the second version. According to Tosfos, from this story of Tassel Push comes the concept that the Gemara is going to mention soon, that in places where they followed Rav's opinion, they didn't eat chal at all, even if they ripped it open and everything else. Okay, that's version number one of what happened. By the way, there's a couple of letters from the Rebbe from the early years, like Tavshin Tes or thereabouts, where the Rebbe points out you have three times in Shas where we find this concept Rav Bika Motza Begoder Bogeder, twice in Erevin and once over here. And if you look at it, one of them has to do with Doimim, has to do with Tchum Shabbos. Another one has to do with Semeach, with Dinim about roots of trees, and this one has to do with Chai Bosa B'cholov. So you see that Rav was trying to fix up things in Doimim, in Semeach, and in Chai.
Is this from the Rebbe?
The Rebbe himself, yeah. Right, did in a couple of letters, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's version number one of where Rav came up with this Chumra. Rav Kahana Matnah.
So it didn't really come up.
So in other words, according to that, it wasn't meant as a general thing, it was meant yet. Rav Kahana Masni Hoki. Rav Kahana learned the discussion like we just said, Rav Elazar asked Rav Yitzchak Bar Avudimi, and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avudimi told him, Rav didn't learn anything about this from me. He came up with this Chumra on his own. Rav Yossi Bar Abba Masni. Rav Yossi Bar Abba learns the discussion differently. He says that Rav Yitzchak Bar Avudimi told Rav Elazar, Anok Chal Shamanika Shemisilai. I did actually teach him a din about Chal. However, I taught him that these dinim apply only to a chal from a nursing animal, where the chal is full of milk. So what happened? How does Rav come to be so machmir on any kind of chal? Because of the pilpul, because of the sharpness of Rav Chia, shana like chal stam. He taught him just plain chal. Namely, in other words, Rashi says, Rav Chia is very knowledgeable and very sharp, so he taught his Talmidim, including Rav, who was his nephew. He taught them a din about Chal. He expected them to understand. He expected that they'd be as sharp and as much on the ball as he was, and realized that obviously the special dinim of Chal are not in general about a Chal, but only specifically when the animal is nursing and the Chal is full of milk. But Rav thought that Rav thought that Rav Chia learned chal, so therefore it means generically the din applies to any chal. So he figured, okay, so I have Rav Chia teaching me that it applies to a chal general. I have Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi who tells me that it applies only to a chal of a nursing animal. Rav Chia's braises are known to be more reliable, therefore it must be like Rav Chia. He didn't realize that Rav Chia didn't mention the part about it being a nursing animal because he thought it was obvious, and he figured the Talmudim will realize it's obvious as well. Meaning that there wasn't really any contradiction with Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Dimi's braisa.
So he said it.
So therefore, so according to the second version, Rav misunderstood Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia had taught plain chal. Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Dimi, meanwhile, had taught him chal of a nursing animal. And Rav thought that there was a contradiction between those two, and therefore he figured Rabbi Chia Rabbi Chia's version is more reliable.
Nursing animal.
Not that it means any animal. That means any animal. Not realizing that Rav Chia was also implying a nursing animal, he just didn't say so because he figured Talmudim would pick up on that on their own. Okay, that happens. Okay. So, another case on the subject, Ravin and Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Iklu Lebei Rav Papi. Ravin and Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef one time visited the house of Rav Papi. Aisul Kamayu Tavshila B'Chal. They brought before them a dish made out of cooked chal. Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Ochal, Ravin Lo Yochal. So Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef ate from it, and Ravin did not want to eat from it. He held that you're not allowed to, that you're not allowed to eat from it. Amar Abaya, so Abaya says, how could that be? Ravin Tichla, Amay Lo Yochal. Ravin, the bereaved, why is he not eating? The bereaved means, in other words, that he lost his children. His children passed away while he was alive. So like you find in a few places in Shas, like they sometimes call him Ravin Tichla sympathetically. Like poor guy, he lost his children. Yeah, it doesn't say, but whatever it is. It actually just says Kover Bonner for you. Shackle Kover as Bonner. He has to bury several of his children. So Abaya says, why didn't Ravin Tichla Amay Lo Ochal? Why is he not eating?
It
doesn't have directly to do with the children. But the point is that they call them Ravin Tichla because of this, out of sympathy for him. But Abaya is saying, the real question is, why is Ravin not eating from the chal? What does he have against it? Does he think that Rav Papi doesn't know the din? Mechti, let's consider. Dvesu de Rav Papi brachi de Rav Yitzchak Napcha avoy. Rav Papi's wife is the daughter of Rav Yitzchak Napcha. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha Morid Ogahava, and Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha is very careful with Mais and Tovim. He knows Halachas. He knows the right way to act. Therefore, obviously, he loved Shmuel Amidei Nosha. So if Rabbi Papi's wife had not heard in her father's house when she was growing up, in Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha's house, that a chal is mutter, loy hava avda, she wouldn't have done it. So the fact that Rabbi Papi's wife is serving, Rabbi Papi's wife, who is the daughter of Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, is serving chal, shows that it's mutter. The Ravin shouldn't be refusing to eat it. That's what Abaya is saying.
Don't base yourself on a woman serving something to say that.
That's the point. No. The point is, she obviously knew from her father's household, from Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, that chal is in fact mutter. So therefore, it's inappropriate for Ravin to be trying to be machmer when we have a clear example from her, which in turn comes from her father, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha, who was known to be careful with mitzvahs, that he should be refusing it, and therefore making it look like he suspects them of serving something chutes or something. It's not an appropriate chumrah, says Abaya.
Why did you do it?
It's a good question, but it's a good question. I don't know. We don't have an answer. Abaya is saying that Ravin, Abaya is saying that he doesn't feel that Ravin should have been doing this. And by the way, you're asking what? No, the Pasha's one has nothing to do with the other. But okay.
I was asking
what? What?
You just said, by the way, you were asking.
No, I was. You were asking about how can we base halacha on what women do. As a matter of fact, there is actually an expression that the Rashba brings in one of his Trovas, that ever brings in a number of his letters and sichas, that the Rashba says, even the minhagim, the old-time minhagim of Jewish women are something very respectable and something that you have to consider as a source in halacha. Yes, for example, where do we get the idea that we say, where do we get the Nusach Chabad, for example, is that the bracha on Shabbos candle is Lahadik Nershul Shabbos Kodesh, whereas the Velt says just Lahadik Nershul Shabbos. And the Rebbe brings in that connection. Yeah. And then the Rebbe brings in that connection, this line from the Rashba, that even the minhag of Noshim Zkenus of our people is worthy of respect. Okay, anyway, so this. Okay, let's go on. So here's more on this topic of Chal. The Surah Le'Amah. Yeah. it's still halacha as far as the what words do you say in the bracha.
So the vouchers say Kodesh also.
Because they're Noshim Skenas didn't say Kodesh, but are Noshim Skenas, so the wives of the... Fine, that's okay, the point still remains. Okay. The Surah like Achli Kachli, so in Surah, which is where Rav had his yeshiva, they didn't eat otters because, as we said, Rav was machmer on them. But Pumpadissa, Achli Kachli, whereas in Pumpadissa, they did eat the chal. So here's a story in that connection. Rami Bar Tamri, Dehu Rami Bar Dikuli, Rami Bar Tamri, who is also known as Rami Bar Dikuli, or in Menachos, actually, he's introduced a little bit. Exactly. Tamar means date palm. Means date. Dekel means a date palm. So yeah, one possibility is some people called him or his father or whatever by the name of the fruit, and others by the name of the tree. In Menachos, he's introduced a little bit differently. Rami, it's brought over here in the Thursday Shas. Rami Bar Tamri, who is the father-in-law of Rami Bar Dikuli. Anyway, whatever it is, Mipumbadissa, he was from Pumbadissa, Ikla, the Surah of Mala Yom Dikipuri. He one time visited Surah on Erev Yom Kippur. Now, people are shechting animals and eating in order to have meat for the meal before the fast. So people are shechting animals, but they can't eat the chal, because the minhag in Surah is that you don't. Therefore, Akinu Kula Amla Kachalinu, so everybody took their udders, their chal, shedinu, and they threw them out, because they can't eat them.
Gold mine.
Yeah. Also, Ihu, so Rami Bar Tamri came along. He went along, Naktinu, he collected them, Achlinu, and he was eating them. So they brought him to Rav Chista, who was the Rosh Hashiva and the Rav of Surah, after Rav.
Handcuffed him?
No, handcuffed him, but they brought him. One second. Amale, so Rav Chista tells Rami Bar Tamri, Amai to Eved Hochi, how could you do that? We don't eat chal around these parts. Amalei, so Rami answers, "May Asra did Rav Yehuda Amra. I come from Rav Yehuda's place, from Pumbadissa, the Ochel, and Rav Yehuda does eat them, so I'm entitled to one son of them." Hold on.
You should have been there.
Yeah. Amalei, so Rav Chista tells him, "Bless Loch Nos and all of Chumrei Amakim Shiyotim Yisham, v'Chumrei Amakim Shaholach Hashem." Don't you hold of the din that when a person is traveling from one place to another, he has to follow the chumras of the place that he's from and the chumras of the place that he went to? So you, as long as you're in Surah, you're obligated to follow the minhagim of Surah. And by the way, it's coming up Purim now. This is relevant as far as the dinim of they have a Mishnah in Megillah that mentions in this connection of a ben krach. Goes a person from a walled city goes to a regular city or vice versa. When does he celebrate Purim? Yeah, so.
Someone from Jerusalem that's visiting here.
Yeah, or vice versa, yeah. Okay, anyway. So
if he's from an earlier and he comes to a later, he celebrates later.
So there's dinim about it. It depends whether he's planning to return before Purim. It depends.
Well, totally miss Purim.
Yeah. Come on. Okay. So anyway, so the point is, Rav Chista says to him, you're in Surah, you're obligated, as long as you're here, to follow the Minhagim of Surah. Amalei, so Rami answers, yes, but in this case, chutz l'tchum achaltinu, I ate them outside the tchum of the city. This din that you have to follow, the Minhagim of the city, is only within the tchum, is only in the city, or within its tchum. I was outside the tchum.
You're buying it so fast?
Okay.
Wait a second.
Okay, good. So Rav Chista accepts that. Okay, fine. So Rav Chista next asks him, okay, you can't eat raw meat after all of a matavisimu. What'd you roast them with? We're out there in the middle of nowhere, you couldn't have found firewood.
You
still had people who were working out in the fields or whatever. They saw somebody far away collecting things and they went over because they were curious, whatever. Okay. So Rav Chista asked them, matavisimu, what'd you roast them with? Where'd you find wood out there in the middle of nowhere? Omalei bepursini. So Rami tells him, I use seeds of grapes. There were piles of grape seeds over there by the wine presses, and I collected a bunch of those and made a fire of them. So Rav Chista asked in the Jumal Miyayin Nesachavia, how do you know? What if those seeds came from wine that was pressed by Goyim, and then the seeds are also banah?
I also had a machlokes on this.
No. We know they're also banah. The answer is Omalei. However, Rami tells him, no problem, because la'achas shnei masachoy deshavu. It was after 12 months, because you could see they were completely dry. The din that the author is only when they're still moist, only when they still have some moisture in them. Like this, they were so dry, there's no lachluchis, there's no moisture, never mind tam, there's no moisture of yain netzach left in them, even if they were from pressings of grain. Okay. So Rav Chista asked him, the Dilma de Gezel Haba, okay, but how do you know? What if it's stolen? What if they belong to Jews who are planning to come back and get them? Amalei, so Rami tells him, not a problem, because Yirsh Bailam Haba. There was obviously Yirsh of the owners over here, and I know that because the Kodhu Behu Chilfi, because there was already grass and weeds growing among them. In other words, Rashi explains that these pits, these grape seeds, were already rotting away and becoming dust, and you had weeds growing among them, so obviously the owners weren't planning to come back from them. Yeah.
I wouldn't want to join them for his meal.
Well, okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So far, so good. Then, well, then there's still a lot more questions. Chazia, do I have a manach tefillin? Then Rav Chista noticed that this Rami...
About the grain.
Fine, yeah. Chazia, do I have a manach tefillin? He noticed that Rami is not wearing tefillin. In those days, people used to wear tefillin all day long. Amalei, on my time, I'll manach tefillin. So Rav Chista asked him, why aren't you wearing tefillin? Amalei, so Rami answers, chole me'ayin. I have stomach trouble. The Amr of Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda, who was his Rebbe, said, Chole me'ayin, potter min ha'tfilin. A person who has stomach trouble is potter from tefillin. Rashi says, because he would be constantly having to take them off whenever he goes to the bathroom. A Tosfos in Ksubas, which also mentions this concept of Chole me'ayin, being potter from tefillin, mentions a different reason. When a person has stomach trouble, he can't. It's hard for him to be careful. We know as long as you're wearing tefillin, you know, to pass gas, and so forth. It's very hard for a person to struggle with an upset stomach to do that, so therefore he's not wearing tefillin.
Maybe he wouldn't have the time to take them off to go to
That's the point. No, that's basically what Rashi is saying. Okay, fine. So that explains why he's not wearing tefillin. Next, Chazia delo havei k'Rami chuti. Rav Chista also noticed that Rami is not wearing tzitzis. Rami over here, by the way, is not his name. Rami means he doesn't have, literally means cast. It means he doesn't have tzitzis cast, in other words, hanging from his beged like you would normally expect. Amalei, my time of less lachuti. So Rav Chista asked him, why aren't you wearing strings of tzitzis? Amalei.
How do you call them? Chuti?
Chuti means strings, yeah.
No, I know.
But that's what it means. Yeah.
That was the general
lashon. That was the general lashon, I guess. Amalei, Rami answers him, talus sh'ulahi. This is a borrowed garment. The Amar of Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda says a din, Rav Yehuda, his rabbi, says a din, talus sh'ulah, a borrowed garment, kol shloshim yoim, not one second, kol shloshim yoim, for the first 30 days that you have it, p'turim and atzitzis, it's potter from tzitzis. Tosfos mentions over here that actually midaraisa would be potter indefinitely. Midrabanan, we say that you should put tzitzis on it after 30 days.
So a borrowed garment?
A borrowed garment. If you borrow a garment from somebody, it's potter from tzitzis for the first 30 days.
Like that?
Doraisa indefinitely. Midrabanan, after 30 days, you got to put tzitzis on it. Okay. Adahochi, as all of this conversation was going on, I saw Allahu Gavril, that they have a moiker of Wurbe. They brought to Beistin, sort of Chista's Beistin, a person from town over there who was not giving cover. He wasn't doing kibbut avraim, he wasn't giving cover. And by the way, you know, we always, you know, we teach our kids kibbut avraim, you know, generically, like, you know, you got to listen to your tati and mommy is all part of kibbut avraim. Strictly speaking, we know there's a difference between kibbut and moira. Yeah, kibbut is, among other things, you serve them food and drink. You get them clothing, etc. That's all covered. Moira are kind of the negative things. You don't call them by their name. You don't sit in their place. You don't contradict them, etc. So here we're talking about the guy wasn't doing the positive things of kibbud avraim. So kasuhu. So they tied him up and they were going to give him malchus, which there is a concept Rashi mentions that when it comes to a mitzvah loisas, so you have certain kinds of mitzvah loisas, a person gets malchus, some not, and there is a limit. The maximum you can give him is 39. But Rashi brings that from a Gemara in Sobat, that when it comes to a mitzvah saseh, which a person is refusing to do, so here you have a mitzvah saseh of kibud avraim, he's refusing to do, the din is, makin oseh, that's a chetze nafshe, based in, can whip him as much as necessary, even until he dies, and eventually he'll be willing to do the mitzvah rather than do this. So therefore they're tying him up, to give him malchus, to force him to do that. Amalahu, however, Rami Bar Tamri says to Rav Chista and to the Beis Din, Shabkuhu, leave him alone, don't give him patch. The Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa, Kol mitzvah eseh shematan schora b'tzidah, any mitzvah saseh which the Torah mentions in connection with that mitzvah, the reward, and kibud avraim is one of them, kabed esavicha v'esimecha l'man yarichon yamecha, in order that your days will be lengthened, those kinds of mitzvahs, ein Beis Din shalamatam was horin aleha. the base did down here on Earth is not told that you have to force the guy to do it.
Okay.
Because, one second. If it's a mitzvah where there's no reward given in the pasuk, then you have to force him to do it. He doesn't want to sit in the sukkah. He doesn't want to eat matzah or whatever. Give him pech until he's willing to do it. But if it's a mitzvah where the Torah itself mentions a reward, so the implication is the Torah is saying, okay, and if you don't fulfill it, you won't get the reward. But if you choose that you don't care to get the reward, meaning you don't have to be forced into it. Right. So therefore, so don't force him to do it. With that said, though, you have Rishonim who learn that all it means is that you're not, first of all, Tosfos actually mentions, you have Gemaras elsewhere that mention that people forced other people to give tzedakah. So Tosfos says two reasons. Number one, forced could mean that he verbally forced him into it, not that he actually gave him pech. And number two, also tzedakah, you also have Loisa says involved of not closing up your hand, etc. But aside from that, though, you have Rishonim who learn that it doesn't mean that you can't punish him. It means you're not required to. So in that case, why is Rami? So why? In other words, according to that way of looking at it, they could punish him for failing to do kibbud av if they want. So why is Rami by Tamri telling them to leave him alone? So a couple of possibilities. The Smeh talks about because there's a difference. Within mitzvahs, I say themselves, there's a difference. For example, you have the mitzvah, let's say, of returning a mashkin every night, which was Bob Messiah that talks about, that you have to do that. If he doesn't have what to wear, right? So there, that's different. First of all, it still kind of belongs to him. And second of all, as soon as you give him pech, he can right away go and do it. Whereas kibbud av ve'em is not necessarily something that he can do right away on the spot there. The next time, they need food or drink or whatever he's able to, but it's not an immediate thing. It's not an immediate thing, necessarily. The Taz says a different thing. All it means is fine. You have to force him a little bit, but not so much. So he's telling them once you tied him up and you already embarrassed him, you're not required. Then don't do any further. You've done what you need to. Okay. So Amale, sort of Chista says to Rami, Chazina lachta charifas tshuva. Look at this. I see you're very sharp. You have the right answer on the spot for everything. Amale, the Rami answers, I havis the aswid Rav Yehuda. If you were to be now in the place of Rav Yehuda, my Rebbe, achvina loch chufoi, then I would be able to show you real sharpness. In other words, he's giving credit to his Rebbe. As it is, I know a lot, but if I were around my Rebbe and if you had a chance to meet him, then you would see what real sharpness is.
Isn't that a little too much?
No, it means, in other words, he's giving credit to his Rebbe. He's saying the fact of the matter is, my Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda, as sharp as you think I am, but when you're around Rabbi Yehuda, then you see what real sharpness
is. Rabbi Yehuda is
Yes, this is the Talmud of Rav and Shmuel, yes.
Yeah, and this is
Surah. This is Surah where Rav Chista was.
Yeah, Rav Chista was the Rosh Hashiva
of Surah.
And then there was Rav Nachman, who was...
Rav Nachman was in the Chos.
Rabbi Yehuda was, I think, the number one guy there.
Igeres Rav Shira Gaon explains that actually no, as long as Rav Chista was alive and was Rosh Hashiva, as long as Rav Huna was the Rosh Hashiva, then he was the top one in that generation. After Rav Huna passed away, then Rav Yehuda
was alive.
As long as Rav Huna was alive, then he was the greatest one of Rav Huna was the greatest of that
generation.
Yes, and Rav Chista also was, but Rav Chista was kind of a Talmud Chaver to Rav Huna. All right. So I guess this story must have happened after Rav Huna passed away, otherwise Rav Huna would have been the one bringing in Rami Bar Tamri, but I don't know.
And Rami Bar Tamri is son-in-law of Rav Chista.
This isn't Rami, yeah, that's Rami Bar Choma, yes, but this is Rami Bar Tamri.
Different
Rami. How many big major yeshivas they were involved?
Two.
Surah
and Nahauda, and later on that the city of Nahauda was destroyed, so the yeshiva was transferred to Pumbedisa, and from then on you had Surah and Pumbedisa.
It was far away from Nahauda?
I don't know how far it was, but whatever, it was far enough
that
it wasn't affected.
And then let's talk about Chuzah, and then what was in the time of Tuviyomi?
Rav Tavyumi was Rav Ashi, that was Masa Machasi, but Masa Machasi is a suburb of Surah. So all it is when Rava, for example, when Rava was the Rosh Hashiva, the yeshiva from Bedissa was transferred to Mechuzah. When Rav Ashi, and later on Mar Rav Ashi were the Rosh Yeshiva, the yeshiva was transferred from Surah to Masa Machasi. But you had the same way as, like, for example, same yeshiva. The same way as, for example, you have, the Lubavitch yeshiva is not in the city of Lubavitch anymore, right? It's in New York and all over the world, but nevertheless, it still bears the old name, and the same way with all the other European yeshivas. So the same way, more or less. But
oh,
whatever.
Yeah, Fallujah.
Yeah, Fallujah is more or less Pumbedisa. All right, look.
Fallujah is Pumbedisa.
And Surah, I don't know. It's
Surah is right nearby.
Yeah. whatever. We'll.
But, now, when Vatican Makuza, right after Rava passed away, it went right back.
It went back to proper distance.
And
but you know what? Let's have the history. Went back to Surya eventually. Yeah, let's have the history lesson later though, because you know.
That's it. Okay. I got all the information. I need.
Fine.
You can go on.
Okay. All right. So that takes care. So now, for the moment, we're gonna get off the topic of Kal and get on to a different topic, and eventually we're gonna return to Kal. So now we mentioned in this connection the Kal has to be torn open. Clearly, we said in the Mishnah, and that led us into the whole discussion of what exactly happens if you don't, and when do you need to and not. So now we're going to talk about a similar case involving the liver. So Yalta mentioned in her thing that blood is also, but the liver is mutter. However, the fact of the matter is the liver has a lot of blood in it. It's basically like one big clot of blood. So what do you do as far as what do you do? Is it, well, sort of, but whatever. The point is, yeah. Okay, the point is that. Omalei Abaya lit of Safra. So Abaya asked of Safra. Ki Salkas Laha. Some Yud of Safra are always traveling back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. So when you go up to there, meaning to Eretz Yisrael.
Was a trader?
No, he was a Talmid Chacham, but maybe he also was in trade. I don't know. But he was one of the Chachamim who would travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel and bring back questions and answers and halacha and the discussions that are going on in the other place. So when you go up to Eretz Yisrael, Boy Minayu, ask the Chachamim over there, Kavda Ma'atun Bey, what do you, Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, hold about the liver? Are you allowed, Rashi explains the question is it, are you allowed to cook it in a pot like any other meat? Or is it also because meat exudes out of it? Now, you could argue that, Rashi says, the liver itself is essentially much of it is blood. As far as halacha is concerned, it's considered like one big thing of clotted blood. But you could argue, fine, as long as the blood doesn't come out of it, then fine, it's mutter, just like we learned before, that dam shalei pirush is mutter. But when the blood exudes and then gets reabsorbed, then it would be osur, or maybe not. Tosfos learns that the whole discussion over here is if it wasn't salted. If it was salted, then Tosfos learns, then there would for sure be no problem with it. Many other Rishonim disagree with Tosfos on that, and they say that no, salting it does not help because there's so much blood in it that salt is not effective to take out the blood, and therefore they hold that you would need to roast it first, which is the halacha. Okay, so anyway, Abaya says to Rav Safa, ask them what you hold about the liver. He stole it. So when Rav Safra went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechel Rav Zirka, he found Rav Zirka, Omalei, and he asked him, what's the story? Omalei, and Rav Zirka tells him, you should know, Anosh Shalpilei L'Rav Ami V'Ochel. I cooked a liver for Rav Ami, and he ate it. So obviously it must be mulcher.
Bishul.
Yeah, Bishul. Sholak actually is even more, it's like overcooking, like cooking until it becomes salt.
Stewed.
He also the Gabe, so when Rav Safra eventually came back to Abaya to report what he heard, Omalei, so Abaya said, you misunderstood what I was asking. L'meisam nafshal loikam abayli. I have no question about the liver asuring itself. Obviously, we have a concept we learned before, I'd toted l'miflat le'bala. While something is exuding, it's not going to absorb at the same time. So when the liver is exuding blood, it's not going to be absorbing it. And as soon as you're finished cooking it, you take it out of the pot, and therefore it can't absorb anything. So there's no question, obviously, the liver is going to be mutter in that case. If you come in boil the mesa chavata, the question I have, says Abaya, is if you were to cook the liver together with a different piece of meat, then would the other piece of meat become mutter? Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about over here, we're just talking about they were cooked together, and according to Tosfos, we're talking about that the liver wasn't salted. Had it been salted, Rabbi Natan says, then there wouldn't even be a question, because then enough of the blood has been taken out. Again, many Rishonim disagree with that.
Okay.
Because they say that blood is not that salted. No, they say just the opposite. Salting is not good enough. It still doesn't take out enough of the blood.
So what did they grill?
Only roasting. Well, yeah. So the question is, why is Abaya asking that? So Rav Safra says to Abaya, I don't understand why you're asking. Maishna l'meisa nafsha, why is it when it comes to whether the liver asers itself when it's cooked in a pot? You seem to not have a problem with that. You know for a fact that it's mutter. And the reason must be tznan, because we learn in a Mishnah, in a Nefteres, that the liver doesn't become osur if you cook it by itself. Well, then lemeisa chavet or nami lechibar lach. Then why we shouldn't have a question if it was cooked with other meat either? Whether the other meat is also it's not because we learn in that same mishnah hakavet oiseres. The liver is able to make other meat that's cooked with osir. The ena ne'eseres, it itself does not become osir from its own blood, mitznei shei peletes ve'ena belach, because it exudes and it doesn't absorb.
So technically it should be allowed.
So therefore that's the thing. So the Mishnah clearly says both, that the liver itself is mutter, but anything that you cook it with is osir.
Because it exudes.
Because it exudes.
When you cook it.
No, well, that's what we're talking about when you're cooking it. But the point now, Rashi makes a point of mentioning that this is a Mishnah in Seder Zroim, which it is. It's a Mishnah in the Masechet Taharos, because the Mishnah is talking about other cooking Truma and Cholim together, and therefore incidentally it mentions this. Why is Rashi mentioning that? The implication is because we find in some other Gemaras that maybe the Amoraim and Bavel were not so familiar with Seder Zroim and Taharos. We see there's no Gemara Bavli on them. So they learned them, but not to the same extent as they learned Moed and Noshim and Nezikim and Kodshim, which are the four Sedarim that we have, more or less complete Gemara Bavli. And as you saw, they learned Zroim because they're mitzvahs of Floyd Baris. It's practical things that they need to know on a day-to-day basis. The Yerushalmi indeed has Zroim.
But the Yerushalmi doesn't have Kodshim.
The Yerushalmi doesn't have Kodshim, that's true. The Rambam seems to say that there existed a Yerushalmi of Kodshim on his time, and therefore, it was lost. Some people learned, some people understand the Rambam to mean not, whatever, anyway. Tosfos explains differently that, no, of course the Chachamim and Bavel knew all the Mishnayos, including the ones of Zeroyim and including the ones of Taharos. The reason why Rav Safra did not want to bring this Mishnah as a proof originally when Abaya asked the question, and instead he went to ask in Eretz Yisrael, is because he thought that Abaya maybe has a suffix whether there's a difference between regular cooking and shlika, which is overcooking. Yeah. So anyway, maybe he thought, so Rav Safra may have thought. The question is that, according to Tosfos, it's not a matter that Rav Safra thought that Abaya doesn't know the Mishnah. He knew that Abaya knows the Mishnah, but he figured originally that Abaya thought there was a difference between Bishul and Shlika, so therefore when he came back and answered that Rav Zrika said, I did Shlika and it's Mutter, and Abaya says, yeah, but you misunderstood my question, so then Rav Safra realizes, okay, well then in that case, why you know this Mishnah, so why are you asking? You could argue that in that case, that Mishnah maybe is talking about a liver which is intrinsically osur, because, for example, it came from a treifa animal. And there the point would be that it osurs the other piece of meat with it because of the fat that comes out of it and that exudes out of it and... Shamnunisa, not chaylev per se, but shamnunisa, the fattiness of the meat.
Why is it osur?
Because it comes from a treifa, let's say.
Anything
that's... That's the point, in other words. So maybe the Mishnah is talking about, when it says, I covered a seres the ener neseres, when it says the liver after is other meat that it's cooked with, maybe it means that when there's after other meat that it's cooked with, if the liver intrinsically is osur, because it came from a treifa, for example. But it wouldn't osur other meat if the liver itself came from a kosher animal, and the only question is about the blood from it. Maybe the blood is not a problem. Because after all, if the liver itself is mutter, maybe the blood that comes out of it is also not a problem. Mm-hmm. So that's the question. Mishum domamai. What would be the din? What I'm asking is, what happens? The blood that exudes out of the liver. Yeah, the blood that exudes out of a kosher liver. What's the din? What's the din as far as other meat? So therefore, Rav Safra eventually went back to Eretz Yisrael. He had a solik. When he went up to Eretz Yisrael again, Ashkechelet Rav Zirka, he found Rav Zirka again. And he asked him the question, Omale, and Rav Zirka answers him, Hai nami lo tibori loch. That case also you don't have to ask about. I can answer you that one as well. Da'anov yanai breder of Ami, ikon lebeir of Yehuda breder of Shimon ben Pazi, because I and Yanai, the son of Rav Ami, so before we had he cooked for Rav Ami and he ate it, now we're saying his son Yanai and I, ikon lebeir Yehuda breder of Shimon ben Pazi, we visited the house of Yehuda, the son of Rav Shimon ben Pali. They served us a windpipe with kufay, with the things attached to it, which means, Rashi explains, they took the windpipe together with everything that's attached to it from inside the body, the lungs, the heart, and the liver, which are all attached together. And they cooked them together, the achalna, and we ate them. So if they served it, then obviously it must have been mutter. So again, One possibility is that we're talking now we have to be talking about, obviously, that they salted the other pieces, because if they didn't salt the other pieces, nothing to talk about, it would all be awesome.
That was not a liver.
No, the point is you have the liver as one of the four pieces over there. You have the windpipe, you have the lungs, you have the heart, and you have the liver. If we're saying they cooked them all together and we ate them, obviously it has to be that you salted all of them. That's part of what Tosfos is discussing over here, that if you salted the liver normally, then there's no question. So the question is over here, you definitely salted the other pieces, but maybe the liver wasn't salted properly. So nevertheless, we see that it's mutter.
But this was the question.
Is it after in the other pieces? And the answer, obviously, is that not. Because the blood that comes out of the liver is not a problem. Because, again, given that blood is usur, but as Yalta said before, the liver is mutter, even though it's essentially all congealed blood, then therefore the blood that comes from it, obviously, is an exception to the rule, and therefore it's mutter, and therefore it doesn't after the other pieces that are with it. However,
it's congealed is usur.
Blood that's congealed is normally usur, yes. But in this case, we have, the Torah allows us to eat liver, and the Rishonim talk about where we know exactly that you're allowed to, but the fact of the matter is you are. So therefore, in other words, the implication is, even though the liver is essentially, at least as far as halacha is concerned, congealed blood, nevertheless, you're still allowed to eat it. So therefore, we could argue that the blood that comes out of the liver is not usur. It's an exception to the rule of blood being usur. And we see from here, because we have this kanya b'kufe, where everything was cooked together, and nevertheless it's mutter. However, Maskipur of Ashi, the Itamer of Shmuel from Zarukinya, however of Ashi, or some say of Shmuel from Zarukinya, asks on that, that's not a solid proof. The Duma Pi Kona Chutzakderava. Maybe in that case, what they did is they made sure that the free end of the windpipe was outside the pot. So therefore, what happens is... What?
No, okay.
No, so therefore, what happens is that any blood that comes out of the liver or any of these other parts or whatever can drain out through that. Now, so you have the question on the face of it, how is the liver draining into the windpipe? The liver is part of the circulatory system. The windpipe is part of the respiratory system. So in Sichas Cholin, he mentions that he actually did an experiment. He tried this kind of thing, cooking a kanya b'kufe. And he found you actually can see blood coming out through the windpipe, because apparently, he says, what happens is when you cook them together, they get softened enough that now blood is able to penetrate and go from one to the other, and therefore to be able to come out. And the point is, we're showing him explain, when the blood has a free way to come out, like this just pouring out of the windpipe, it's not going to go and meanwhile exude through the tiny pores in the liver, because it'll take a path of least resistance and go right out. So therefore, it'll be mutter. But only in that case, if you had everything, including the end of the windpipe, is in the pot, not necessarily would that work, because the blood has nowhere to go. Inami, or another possibility, you could argue that in this case of the kanya b'kufe, maybe mechot have a cholit le'me'ikra. Maybe what they did is, before they cooked the thing, they took the liver and they put it in vinegar. We mentioned a few days ago that when you put meat in vinegar, the vinegar constricts the pores and the blood vessels and all. So now it makes the blood is not going to come out. So maybe they did that. And therefore, the blood is not going to come out of the liver and get into everything else. That doesn't necessarily prove the answer to Abaya's question. If you didn't do that, whether the other pieces of meat that you cook with it would be kosher. And Tosfos points out, as in fact we see that for Rav Huna they would do that. They would put chalti means that literally means they would boil it, but it doesn't mean boil per se. Means they would constrict it. They would put it in vinegar in order to constrict the blood vessels. And Rav Nachman chalti leberoyskin. B'chala, in vinegar. But Rav Nachman, chalti le'beroyskin, Rav Nachman would have his cook do the same thing for him, except instead of vinegar, he would have them plunge it into boiling water, and it would accomplish the same thing. It would constrict the blood vessels. By the way, in principle, that such a thing is allowed. However, the Gaonim already write that, we're not soymich on that kind of thing, because what if the vinegar is not strong enough? What if the water is not boiling enough? So we don't rely on this concept of chalitza.
So we don't do it.
But the point is, going back to what Rav Zricha and Yanai did over there, maybe they did that. Maybe they did chalitza, which Tosfos says, okay, maybe they have the same sopik, whether it's also or not the same sopik that Abaye is bringing up over here. Or maybe they kept the end of the windpipe out of the pot. Either way, there's no proof that if you didn't do this chalitza and you didn't put the end of the windpipe out of the pot, that it should be mutter when you cooked liver together with the other pieces of meat. Not necessarily. So we still have Abaye's sopik, therefore, is still open.
So the halacha is you cannot do it.
So the halacha is you can't do it because of the suffix, right? Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, that's true. We are. Okay, so let's continue.
Yeah, because if we don't say it,
we'll
be on the next.
Yeah, come on, okay. Okay. The summer of Papa kamei de Rava lameima chala osir. Now, Rav Papa, learning in front of Rava, thought to say that in this case, if you take the liver and you soak it in vinegar to make, again, which the vinegar causes the blood vessels and the pores to constrict, so no blood comes out, Rav Papa thought to say that afterward that vinegar will be also to drink. Because he thought you could, you know.
Vinegar?
Yeah, why not? some people like pickle juice. Pickle juice is basically vinegar. I like pickle juice, for example. Okay, whatever. Fine, whatever. The point is, you can mix vinegar with water and drink it, for example. Okay, whatever. The point is that Rav Papa thought to say the vinegar itself would be also, you could use it as salad dressing, conceivably, you know. Whatever. The point is Rav Papa thought that it absorbs some of the blood from the liver and therefore it should be also afterwards. However, Amalei, but Rava tells him no. If the vinegar is going to be also, then the liver itself will automatically have to be also as well, because then blood came out of it. And blood that came out of it is going to make it ulcer. Because the liver will exude blood, and then later on it's going to reabsorb blood from that vinegar. Because after all, there comes a point when it's not poilet anymore. There comes a point when it's not exuding anymore, and then it would be able to reabsorb. The fact that we see that it's mutter if you soak it in vinegar means therefore the vinegar does not absorb any blood, and therefore the vinegar itself is mutter, and you can use it for salad. So here's a case.
What does it do if it doesn't take the blood out?
It doesn't take the blood out. It constricts the blood vessels so that the blood stays in its places in the liver. It's an astringent, right. Okay. So here's a case. Rav Bar Shaba Ikwal Abay Rav Nachman. Rav Bar Shaba, that was his name, visited the house of Rav Nachman. Isolate Kavda Shlika. They brought him a well cooked, again, shlika means more overcooked, an overcooked liver. The loy ochal, and he didn't want to eat from it, not because he didn't like liver, but because he held there's a problem with it la locha. So they told Rav Nachman, Barbe Rav de Lagab, there's a young Tamad Chacham de Lagab who's in the house. Loy ochel, he's not eating from what you served. Umanu, and who is that? Rav Bar Shaba. Amalahu Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman tells them that's no good. Gamu l'shaba, stuff it down Shaba's throat. In other words, he called him Shaba like by his father's name, as like a derogatory kind of thing. Like we find, for example, sometimes the Jews called Moshe Ben Amram, for example. But also he's like, stuff it down his throat. In other words, he has to eat it. He has to eat it. The fact is it's mutter, and he has no right to act as if it's all.
He doesn't want to. Maybe.
But that's the point. The point is he's not
the same guy that had black shoes.
The point is, it's not that he didn't like it. It's not that he didn't like it. He didn't want to eat it because he thought there was a problem with it in halacha. Rav Nachman is telling them in that case, he has no right to that opinion. The fact of the matter is it is 100% mutter, and if he's going to act like that, then force him to eat it because it is mutter al pi halacha. Okay. So this is ketanoi. This is actually a machlokas tanoim about the subject of a cooked liver. Namely, a brayta says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer covered Oseres Ve'Einu Neseres. Rabbi Eliezer says the liver will after other meat that's cooked with because of the blood that comes out of it. Ve'Einu Neseres, it itself does not become oser from its own blood. Because as we said before, it exudes blood, it doesn't reabsorb it, because when it's being poilet, it's not beleya. Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochanan Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch Omer Mitzubelas Oseres Venaseres. If it's spiced, if it's seasoned with spices, so the spices soften it, then it is able to absorb. So then it would be osir by itself, and then it will after other meat that is cooked with. The spices make it absorb because they soften the meat, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like meat tenderizer, yeah. Shluka oseres venaseres. And also, if it's overcooked, then also it's softened, and therefore the same thing. It becomes osir, and it afters others. So therefore, so Rav Bar Shaba held, apparently, like Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch, whereas Rabbi Nachman is telling them, no, the halacha is actually like Rabbi Eliezer, that preletis, ve'ena belas, and over here, in this case, the liver that he was serving wasn't spiced, but it was overcooked. So therefore, it was exuding and not absorbing, and therefore, Rav Nachman is telling them that Rav Bar Shaba is wrong for not eating it.
So if it had been...
If it had been spiced, or with other pieces of meat, then yes, you could talk about whether it's also or not.
It doesn't make those pieces of meat trash, does it?
Well, that's what we said before. Abaya was asking the question, yeah. Would it? And he asked the question. We didn't answer it. We left the question open.
So some say that's
what... Therefore, that would be a reason to say it's also, because the other pieces absorb blood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, another case. Rabba Bar Rav Huna Ikol Abay Rabba Bar Rav Nachman. Rabba Bar Rav Huna one time visited the house of Rabba Bar Rav Nachman. I still come. So before we have Rav Huna and Rav Nachman in the little history lesson that we had. So now it's their respective children. I still come. Savi Tachoi. They brought out before Rabba Bar Rav Huna. They brought out three sa'ah of good quality bread that was smeared with honey and oil. Chachai means that they were smeared. And Rashi explains that they were smeared with oil and honey. And also there was pasnakia, it was white bread. So it was very high quality bread or pastries or whatever. And three saw of it, which is quite a lot.
Sounds like a
Sephardic
recipe.
Yeah. So Rabba Bar Rav Huna asked them, Mihava Yad Itu Dasti, no, did you know in advance that I was coming, that you prepared so much good food? Omrule, and the people of Rabba Bar Rav Nachman's household answered him, Miyadifas Lon Mina. Do you think that you are more important to us than her, meaning Shabbos? We prepared this for Shabbos. Miyadifas Lon Mina. Mina means Shabbos. Do you think you're more important to us than Shabbos?
It was
Shabbos itself, whatever. Dichtiv karot al Shabbos dining, as it says, you should make Shabbos a delight. So we made all of this tachoy, all of this well smeared bread in honor of Shabbos. You happen to be here, so then you're welcome to enjoy. Okay, no, but they're explaining to him that he should realize no, because
it goes
back to the matter of Gnevis Das. Yeah, Gnevis Das. If they were to make it as though they did it in his honor, that would be Gnevis Das.
I never said to say instead, and not to say in his honor, but at least not to say that.
The fact of the matter is they wanted to stress that we made that it was mainly the covered shot.
Why? Because
it was important to point out that you do everything possible to honor Shabbos. I mean, it's Hamad Chacham, it's also called Shabbos, so fine, okay. Adahochi, as this conversation was going on, Ashkahahu Kavda, he noticed that there was a liver over there, to have a basimpoina that had in it a large vein, the blia dama that was full of blood. So they had tried to, they'd kashered the liver, but they tried to kasher the liver, but it still had this big vein in it that was full of blood. So he asked them, why'd you do that? You can't do that. Salt is not going to help. Salt only helps for blood that's dispersed throughout the meat. It doesn't help when you have a big cavity like that, a big vein that's full of blood. So they said to him, okay, so what should we do? So he answers them, Kiru Shefi Ve'erev, the Chatich V'chitucha L'tachas. What you should do is cut open the liver, Shefi Ve'erev, lengthwise and widthwise. That's why we're bringing this in, because this is similar to the cow before, yeah. So rip it, Shefi Ve'erev, V'chitucha L'tachas, and when you put it in the oven to roast, make sure the cut side is downward so that the blood can drain out of it, right. And the Gemara says, "Vahani milik kavda." Now that only applies when you're roasting a liver that you have to make sure that you cut it and that the cut side is down. Abotachla. But what about the clean. Now it's clean.
Because
for the chal, well, for one thing,
to get out of those
But there, the point is that since it's dispersed throughout the compartment, it doesn't really matter so much. Once you whip the chesty ge'erev and pressed it against the wall, you've gotten as much milk of it out of it as you can. Yeah. Okay. Aval tachla, but when it comes to the toil, which is the spleen, now the spleen is also reddish. It also looks like an organ made largely out of blood, and in fact it does. It, among other things, it breaks down red blood cells in the body. So you would think, therefore, you would have the same problem, that there's a lot of blood in it, and maybe it needs special treatment. Nope. Shumna ba'almuhu, as far as halacha is concerned, it's just a collection of fat, and therefore you don't have to treat it differently than any other meat. You can kasher it the normal way, and you can roast it or cook it the normal way without having to do anything special. What? What?
There's a lot of blood.
There is, but nevertheless, it's still, halacha doesn't consider it to be as, the kid doesn't say it, the kidney even clashes, the kidney is the same thing. A kidney that doesn't have any more blood than any particular organ. Of course, it has to be kasher, like any other organ. The toil also has to be kasher, but no more than that. Kihad Shmuel, as we find the example of Shmuel, abdulei tafshila the tachli, they would make him a cooked dish of spleen, implying that you can cook it normally, like any other meat. The yoma de Ovid Milsa, on the day when he had bloodletting done. In other words, the point is, it's true that the spleen has a lot of blood in it, And it looks reddish, and therefore it helps, and therefore it has a good effect on the blood supply of the body. Therefore, on a day when Shmuel would have bloodletting done, he would make sure to eat spleen in order to replenish his blood supply as fast as possible. However, as far as halacha is concerned, so that's as far as medically, then it has that. But as far as halacha is concerned, it's just like any other meat. It's just like a piece of fat, and therefore you don't have to treat it any differently than any other.
Not blood, but you have to drain it out.
Right. Of course, any blood that comes out of it would be also like any other blood elsewhere in the body. So you still have to salt it and kasher it like normal, but no more. It's just like any other body part. Davin Milsa means he would do the thing, which means bloodletting. So on the day that he would have bloodletting done, then he would make sure to eat toilet.
Okay.
Yeah.